Blog Talk Radio.
And it's Sunday evening, so this is the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters Radio. And thank you all for listening in or podcast listening. We appreciate everyone. Today with me is my co-host, Wayne Johnson, up there in Ohio. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, how you doing, Gwen? Mike, you too.
I'm okie dokie. Let me say that much. And want to shout out to Jack, who I know will listen in sometime this week. Jack, hope you get better. Wishing you well, sending you prayers and all that good stuff so that you get healthy. Today, our show, we have a guest. This is a gentleman who is running for the congressional seat in District 21 here in the state of Florida. His name is Mike Trout. He's an independent, and we are going to have some the show is going to be talking with Mike and finding out what he's all about. But as usual, we're going to open the first few minutes of the show with a little bit of recap of the week. Wayne, what stood out to you this week?
Well, I guess the first thing that would jump out is Trump obviously has a mole within his organization, and they have dropped off to a reporter's, New York Times reporter, I think, in their mailbox, basically his tax returns. And there's also promise that there's going to be more stuff coming out that basically shows Trump for what he is. I'm going to switch and add one more here, Gwen, because it is a sad note, but definitely worth mentioning, was that poor little six-year-old first grader in South Carolina, where, again, a mentally ill kid, 14-year-old, got a gun and shot some of the classmates while the little boy died yesterday.
Yeah.
And I can't stand it when I hear the little ones get harmed and hurt. And there's got to be some kind of common sense now that's got to be brought on gun control.
Well, and that's like little Zahina, who was on actually Reverend Sharpton's show on MSNBC this morning. I caught before I went out the door. The little gal in North Carolina, who went before the Charlotte City Commission and pleaded with them, why are you killing our mothers and fathers? And, you know, we have tears and we don't want to have tears. And she was very compelling, but, you post something like that in social media and you say the next person who says all lives matter gets a slap by me for not understanding the reason for saying that Black Lives Matter. Also, there's been a dime drop into the social stratosphere, social media.
I like that. Drop the dime on him.
from the Ecuadorian embassy in London, Mr. Fond at WikiLeaks, which was really such a beneficial whistleblowing kind of a structure at the beginning. And yet, within the last couple of months, he's outed people as gay in Saudi Arabia, which is a death penalty.
Right, exactly, and, right.
And he aligned himself with the conspiracy theorist by the name of Alex Jones, which we all know Trump thinks a great deal of. This guy is a loony too. And Assange, a two-year-old tweet of his own about that he tweeted from Huma Abedin asking Hillary via Twitter whether she remembered her earpiece for a speech she was giving at the UN, but Assange made it look as though it was part of a conspiracy to be fed information during that fabulous debate. I mean, honey. I mean, she wiped the floor with it, but we knew that was where that was going. I did. I figured she
would. Yeah, same here, Gwen. Yeah, it was.
And And no matter which direction they come from next time round, especially if they're going to be coming from the position of Bill Clinton's infidelities and her being some kind of enabler, he thinks
right.
this is going to extend the women's vote. He thinks
right.
that's going
exactly.
to...
you know, the man does not have any critical thinking skills at all. He's blustering blowhard, and that's it.
And he can't focus. He cannot stay focused. He's dog whistles and buzzwords. And he
can't.
I mean, let's ask our guest. It would be appropriate to ask Mike Trout and introduce him. Mike, are you with us still?
Hi, Gwen. Here I am.
Very good.
Yeah, are you? Are you hearing what we're pounding on out here?
Yeah, I just missed that last topic. I was trying to get some notes together.
We were actually talking about how Hillary Clinton did during the debate, and Mr. Trump's espoused by his mouthpieces, including Rudy Giuliani. Oh my God. Of how to go at her as a strategy the next time to bring up her husband's infidelity. That plus we did hit on Julian Assange too. I said that he was full of Russian intelligence bullshit, but that's basically where we've been coming from here at the beginning of the show. You'll have to excuse us.
Regarding the debate regarding Donald Trump, I have to go back to that old saying, once a circus, always a circus. That's an old saying.
I like that.
It'll be old tomorrow. It'll be old tomorrow.
Did you ever? Did you ever? Mike, why don't you give us and our audience an idea of your candidacy, why you're running, what made you run, and what you see as the most important issues for you to focus on in your candidacy.
Gosh, they're sort of tough questions because when people ask me, well, why do you like politics? Well, I hate politics. I really would like to see some good government and good policy, and I think I have some good ideas. I want to go in for... you know, I always say God gave the rest of us a single adequate limited term, whatever term he gives of, you know, all of us here on this green earth. And I wonder why politicians think that they should have any more than that, right? They want to get a seat
right.
and stay in it for a whole career. And so I'm not about that. I want to run for a single adequate term. When I get in, one of my proposals is to extend the term of the Congress because 2 years is too short, really.
Right.
So and then half of that term is spent campaigning, you know. So
mm-hmm. yeah.
even once you get elected, these guys, they never close the campaign office. And so they're distracted for the whole of their term. They're distracted with the next campaign. So to me, you're liberating – public servants to do their job with undistracted. My proposal would be to give the House a 6-year term. Most importantly, you know, start with the presidency because we don't elect a president for 4 years. We elect him for 2 years and a 2-year campaign because no matter who wins this thing, in 2 years, you know, a presidential campaign starts 2 years out. So in 2 years, it starts all over again, all this divisive kind of stuff that's just, you know, people showing colors and fighting and nobody's working together for that whole time. Everybody's just figuring out, you know, what's the best shot they can take at the other guy. And it's terrible for the country. So I say I think the president would appreciate 6 clean years without, you know, without worrying about a reelection. So then I would do with the House 6 years and just the single adequate term. So after the 6 years, you're out. Doesn't mean you can't go back into public service in some other spot. but let's stop all the seat hogging. And the Senate, I would put it at 8 years, one single adequate term.
That's interesting. Some of that is very agreeable. Other parts, I'm not so sure, but I see your point. I see your strategy. How did you get interested in politics enough to run this time?
Gosh, I grew up in a sort of socialist utopia in Panama Canal Zone, which was was a U.S. territory, and but it was a big company town, and everything from cradle to grave was taken care of. We had health care, we had great schools, it really was a socialist utopia. And when I first came to the States and when I first saw my first Skid Row, I guess that's right. When I woke up that this, this place wasn't exactly paved with gold.
No.
I was going to say, I'm some of the few people that can say that I've actually been through the Panama Canal when I was with the Navy and went through there. This was about the time of Jimmy Carter. Yeah, they just taken over, so.
Sure, well, I was there. You went right by my head.
Well, there you go. Well, I should have waved.
You might have. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Might have been out there on the hill waving back. I don't know. Because we did
Very
that.
Nice. Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Mike, what are the issues here locally that concern you the most?
Well, locally, of course, the big environmental issue is Lake Okeechobee and, the runoff into all these other, the rest of South Florida, the problems that they're causing. I think it's been proved pretty well that the local authorities can't handle this job. I think it's a job for the federal government to bring in the Army Corps of Engineers. It's a major engineering fix that needs to happen. And I don't see it happening, between the cities and the counties and the local governments. I don't see them putting together an effective plan. Or it would have been done already, because this is not a problem.
Well, it also entails the cooperation of Tallahassee, and Tallahassee is notoriously uncooperative with anything that allows for funding and granting. Take this year's grants that were supposed to come through at election time for just Lake Worth to a grant on a corporate plaza down there that the whole city commission ran on initially was approved by this governor. And then the moment the election was over, he reneged on the grant. That's how Republicans have notoriously run this state over and over again. And I don't like Governor Scott at all. I don't agree with it about anything that he's done. And I'm especially displeased right now at him spraying for the Zika virus poison into the communities. I think that's horribly irresponsible. And it goes back to a profit motive once again, because his wife owns the chemical companies that are providing the poisons being sprayed.
Yeah, how does that work?
I was going to say, come on, go figure.
Go figure.
Yeah, jeez. Well, Mike, you're campaigning as an independent. Do you have anybody for the Senate seat that you would like to see elected? Do you have a preference in this race here?
Yeah, I'm actually with the U.S. Senate seat. I'm going independent, and I'm endorsing my good friend Basil Dalek, who's an independent. He's 86 years old. He's going to be on every single ballot in the state of Florida. He's running on a peace platform, and that's the entirety of his platform, and I can respect that.
I hear you.
His website is basildalek.com. Well, everybody, all the mail ballots will be coming out next week. I guess they go out on October 7th. So
yeah, get one. Yeah, that's true. I get one. We lost Mike.
Oh, darn.
Oh, dear. Let me try calling him back in.
All right. Well, in the meantime, we can, while you're doing that, I'll we can cover a few things. Like I said, there's a lot here in the news lately. Here in Ohio, there was a woman who was head of the Republican Party and Trump's campaign in one of the counties here in Ohio. And
yeah.
A British reporter came on and basically said, you know, her policy
with
Trump and stuff. And she just started out the most racist, idiotic, nihilistic stuff. And by the time she got done talking with him, they
had Please leave your message for
Mike.
Yep. Hey, you back, Mike?
Nope, I don't think I got his message. Oh, dear.
Oh, all right.
Okay, we'll try that one again. So she did. She was basically.
She thought she didn't say anything wrong. She thought in her mind that she was giving good, factual, intelligent, critical, thought out review. And
yeah.
It's like, this is the problem. There's a lot of people out there that think that this is.
I'm sorry, Gwen, can you hear me?
Yes, we're back now.
Got you back, Mike. We got you back.
Hello?
Yeah. Oh,
can you
hear
me,
us?
Mike? Oh, dear. I think Mike, can you hear me?
It's got to be Obama's fault. Yeah, let's go with that one.
I'll tell you what. It's like communications are opening back up, but in the freakiest ways.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
And the other thing, too, with regards to Trump and stuff, there are people, I mean, there are newspapers that have not backed a Democrat for 125, 40 years that are saying,
oh, yeah.
No, we are backing Hillary Clinton because that man is a nut job.
That's
unstable.
Correct.
He is unfit.
There's a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
You're back. I'm sorry.
Can you hear me now?
Yes,
oh,
I'm trying. I lost the call, and then I tried to call back in, and I couldn't get you, and so then I was going to try a different browser with the Hangouts, but you called back in, so I don't know. Metro PCS.
Well, let's pick up where we left off. You were talking about the other person who you're running along with, who's very much in the environmental aspects.
Your Senate pick. Please elaborate again, Mike, on your Senate pick.
Well, Baz, like I said, he's 86 years old. His website, so you know, people can look in on his campaign, is Basil Dalak. For Senate, his name will be at the top of every Florida ballot that comes out, starting with the absentee ballots get mailed out on October 7th here in Palm Beach County, so I assume it's the same day across the state, I'm not sure. His whole platform is peace, and he thinks, and I believe he's right, that if we get that right, everything else falls in place. Because if we're not blowing the entire budget on bombs and bullets,
well, we'd sure have a lot more resources to take care of the needs of the people here at home.
I hear you. Yeah. I hear you. Did you take a look this year? There was a woman running. Her name was Pam Keith. She tried for the Democrat ticket. Did you hear?
Yeah.
I like Pam Keith, but I did support Alan Grayson.
Well, in the primary, I supported Alan as well. I'm a lifetime Democrat. I'm running as a progressive independent, but I am a lifetime Democrat. And yeah, and Alan was one of the most effective members of the House.
Yeah, I think his wife has now claimed the nomination for his seat. His new wife. I really liked Pam Keith the best. I really did. I listened to her. But I also know Alan, and I like Alan. I wish he got along with people better, but he really makes his point. He really gets things done. And it's a shame that someone like Patrick Murphy has taken that position up. Now we're stuck with, well, we're not stuck. You just gave us another candidate to look at, and I thank you for that. I had no idea. And I'm usually pretty up on it. I had no idea. We don't want Rubio back in that seat at all.
Oh, hell no.
Hell no.
Oh, God help us. No. He doesn't even commit to serving out the term. You know, one of my proposals, I call it No More Dupes. And dupes is an acronym for disruptive, unnecessary political elections. And that's when you have somebody who just to further their own career, quits the job. You know, they've taken an oath. All the people have voted for him to get into an office, and then halfway through, they're just going to quit. That's exactly what he's actually promising to do.
He's already said that. It's like, if I get a chance to run for president again, I will. And here's the other part about that. He and Cruz, both of them, it's just amazing to me, gentlemen, that these guys, these Republicans, are acting the way they are about Donald Trump. With all the obviousness before them, it's just incredible to me. I don't know. It's how do they do that? How do they do that?
Well, again, Gwen, I refer to them as the easily misled. You know, it's the Nazis. Joseph Goebbels said, "If you tell a big enough lie often enough, there will be people out there that will accept it as being fact and turn around and repeat it." We're dealing with low-information voters, the libs. They really don't have a grasp on even the real world, but it's what they want to grasp onto like a security blanket. That's about the best way I can say it. They want to grasp on it like a security blanket because they can't really deal in the changing real world that we're living in today.
Well, and take a look at Mitch McConnell in front of microphones today telling the world that it's President Obama's fault that we made the wrong vote in the House and the Senate for these lawsuits to go forward by 9/11 families against the Saudis. It's his fault.
Yeah, that's great.
It's his fault, even though he vetoed it. It's his fault. I mean, it's incredible, absolutely incredible what the Republican Party has, the bed they've made for themselves.
Absolutely. This
some
is
kind of alternate reality that
no
it's
doubt.
Just
no
great.
Doubt.
Mike, I'd like to ask you, what are some of the other points that you would like to put forward as a campaigner? I was seeing here where you've posted on your public page about the public health emergency in Palm Beach County. Can I ask you, Are you in favor of single payer and extending Obamacare, or would you like to see it become something more different, like full Medicare? What's your position there?
Yeah, the simple answer is, now take this with this grain of salt, but Obamacare is much better than what we had before. There's a whole lot more people that are insured, but the costs are still excessive for the people who have the misfortune of actually getting sick and actually needing it.
And so my
solution, and it's a progressive solution that's widely shared, I think, is to repeal Obamacare and simultaneously implement a Medicare for all universal plan that is not funded by premiums, it's funded by general revenues. You know, our military budget, we don't charge the people a premium every time we drop a bomb around the world. Neither should there be a premium for every time we drop a bomb in the war on disease and the war for health, right? For good health.
Kind of a unique perspective on that. You brought up some good common sense.
Yeah, and, you know, especially when you talk about emerging infectious diseases, you know, everything from, you know, it's at our peril, tuberculosis, hepatitis, none of these viruses or germs or bacteria, they don't know the difference between an insured person and an uninsured person. So if people think that, you know, I've got mine, now you get yours, you know, I've got my insurance and they don't worry about other people, well, you know, it's at their peril, because you can walk down the street and touch the wrong surface and you could be picking up some of these dangerous pathogens.
Exactly.
That's quite true. I know that for a certain percentage of people that the Obamacare is working out. For another group of people, it is not working out as well. The insurance is skewed. And those who would like to preserve Obamacare have been saying there's a way to fix this. Well, if there's a reasonable momentary flip of the switch that will do it, that's one thing. Another thing is to extend I like the idea of Medicare for all and it coming out of our taxes and whatever we're able to pay and being able to, you know, enjoy the security of, you know, if I get sick, I have health care. Talking from a very personal perspective, having been in and out of the hospital without insurance for the last year, last 2 years, twice. And it's no, especially when you have a governor that won't extend the help of the Medicare money. It's not fair. It's not right. Of course, they can't get blood from a stone, but it's still not fair. It's not right. So the Medicare extended a single payer system would be a lot more fair. I think Mike has a good idea.
Great. Well, also, too, let me interject here. The VA can go out and negotiate with the different drug companies because they have volume, you know, economy of scale. When I was in sales and marketing, somebody's ordering 100,000, you know, widgets from me versus a guy that's ordering 10, that other guy's going to get a decent price. He's going to get a better price because he's going to give me more volume of the business. And that's just typical business. That's a standard throughout all of industry, capitalistic industry. Well, when Bush put forth the prescription plan in Medicare and Medicaid, it was specifically written in there that Medicaid and Medicare cannot negotiate a better price on the economy of scales that they would be doling out. They are paying full market, off-the-shelf price for the drugs that they're handing out, and by law, they cannot negotiate it down. That's one thing that needs to be addressed down. Instead of somebody having to pay $600 for an antibiotic, that's, you know, because it's written through Medicaid, Medicare, which is basically taking out our tax dollars and the citizens here, padding the pockets of corporations that have brought their influence into our this government, is get that corrected, get a volume of scale negotiated so that the prices can be down around $3 or $4 a pill, period.
Yeah, and, you know, Bernie Sanders had a really great idea, which was, you know, we have to, you know, sort of maybe pull an eminent domain move. What he suggested was the federal government buy up the patents on some of these drugs that are, you know, I mean, Gilead Sciences, with their hepatitis drug, it's not right that people are dying for lack of a drug that doesn't treat hepatitis, it cures hepatitis. And people are dropping like flies. I mean, it may not sound like a lot, but the rate of hepatitis infection in the general population is about 1%. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big number.
Hepatitis B is in Bravo. Bravo or Charlie, which hepatitis did my ask?
Pardon me?
Do you know who has a good idea or who is trying to implement that patents buying up? There's actually a foundation out there that is trying to do some of that. Did you know that?
I didn't. And I knew it was a Sanders proposal, so I don't know which came first, that group or his idea.
No, that was either
Bill
Gates or Zuckerberg.
It's a foundation that's actually been putting out a lot of drugs to help with the extraordinary viruses that are plaguing the planet right now, and it's the Clinton Foundation, guys. No shit.
Oh, okay, of course.
Of course, darn it. There you go.
I knew that. Are you trying to say I didn't know that?
Yes,
that's absolutely right. They've done a lot of great work.
One of those little known things. I asked a friend of mine the other day who's very much a, not just an independent, but has dubbed me because of my candidate preferences this time around, a neoliberal. Which I'm just an old liberal here, okay, fellas. But he basically said, what was it that about you know the all of the rhetoric? We're not hearing any policy. We're not hearing any real factual evidence from the journalists, except in the back. Speak about what's really going on with certain foundations like the Trump Foundation or the Clinton Foundation. And I propose this, you know, how would you like to be a fly on the wall of the Oval Office for just 24 hours? What do you think it takes to run this country and all of its geopolitical connective quality out there in the world? The compromising, the stopgaps, the emergencies, the minor crises that can blow into a tinderbox we'll never know. How would you like to sit in that office for 24 hours and come face to face with that reality and then deal with the kinds of plans that you know you have to put out there because this is what's going to work in the real time, in the real world, with all of the different people on the planet? I mean, I think it comes down, and you guys tell me what you think, but I think it really comes down to more always character, the quality of character in the people you're picking. You know?
Yeah, character is definitely.
I mean, none of us knows what it took for.
Not it's not for a place. It's never been on the bucket list. It's never, you know, wanting to be in Congress. Yeah, that's always something I wanted to do. I don't want to spend my whole life there. I go in, do the very best job I can, and get out of the way so that somebody else
with some new and even better ideas can come in behind me, and I wish that would happen with every office all across the land. But to be president, to be in that office, no way. It takes a special person. I think Obama is a special person. I think he's done a great job against great odds.
Well, I know this, and I've said many times, just as Jackie Robinson has had his number retired by every team in the baseball league for, number one, when he broke the color barrier, the stuff and the crap that he put up with, biting his tongue, keeping the high ground, and basically giving back a reply with his deeds. Same thing will be applied to the President Obama. Came in at a bad time. The whole world economy had been destroyed by corporate banking abuse, being enabled by the laws that we passed in the Bush and Cheney administration. Did nothing but has been subjected to the most vile racist torment comments. Being worked against at every step of the way ever since he swore in the very first time, and came out on the high ground and brought us out of recession, giving us all a better life that has improved. The middle class has kind of increased a little bit, and he will go down in history just as Jackie Robinson did, as being a high moral man that did a great service to the country.
Yeah, I think you're right, Wayne.
You know, guys, the numbers are the numbers. And, of course, they're government institutions, but they're run by both Democrats and Republicans. And they bring out our GDP. They bring out the numbers of the economy. And I can tell you, just as a small cottage business, very, very small, my business increased last year, finally. Just a bit, a noticeable bit. I do know people that are in professional jobs, whether they're working, and some of them are only working part-time, and yet their income did increase last year a couple of $1,000s. And here's the other thing. It's not just campaign rhetoric. We have brought between 5 and 10 million people out of abject poverty during his administration.
There you go. Well stated.
And how many million who are going over to the hospital and getting some kind of care where they were getting nothing before? So there's a lot to be said for that, but you won't hear much of it because, I mean, we'd rather hear about how this Republican who's running now is, you know, smarter for not paying taxes and friggin' email, you know, on the Democrat.
And this is 2 years of this already, you know, 2 years of this presidential campaign. I think it's just too much for the people to bear. It's too much to ask the people to bear.
It's true, Mike. Societies right now, but please, guys, remember, it's not just America. The social unrest and anger and injustice is present in Western and Eastern countries all across this planet right now. I think these stark polarities that we are looking at, because you've definitely got white hats and black hats in front of you right now. And the gray in between is more fuzz than it ever has been. I know really good Republicans, really good conservatives, who are simply going to write in this state a presidential candidate because, well, you know, for 30 years they've heard this, that, or other about Clinton, and they just can't bring themselves to. The majority of them I know are voting Hillary. But the other crowd is just, it's, I mean, there's groups of boys, they call them Trump boys. I don't know if you've seen them around, Mike, but we have up here, there are standing at overpasses with Trump banners all day long, talking about Trump and, you know, hoo-haing and hee-hawing for Trump on this. They're usually young men, young white men. And in one crowd that was at an exit, a 95 exit get off up here a couple of weeks ago, they were all skinheads, which is kind of scary. Even
right.
though I live in a very, very good energy place with a lot of kind people up here, you still got a lot of folks who are like, you know, very old deep south. There's a lot of racism going on right now. A lot of it.
Well,
and
on that peninsula I grew up on, they are Klansmen there. This is the area that Harriet Tubman escaped from the plantation and Frederick Douglass, all in that area there on the Delmarva Peninsula. There's still that same Klans, John Birch Society mindset, and they don't think that they're wrong.
I mean, they're very small communities. They really are. They're very small communities, but they've been given this huge megaphone just when the national, I mean, my gosh, guys, the national law of the land just put equality in for the LGBT
yes.
community. We have equal
right.
marriage rights. They, you know, there's been extraordinary advances happening in the last few years. Really good news. And right now you've got a pocket of people who are just so frustrated and upset and in fear over this that's where a lot of this Trumpism, I think, is coming from.
Oh,
he just reaches out to the lowest common denominator and seems to, like you say, he's handing out megaphones to just the worst elements among us, I think.
Well,
and
Gwen knows this, Mike. Back in 2005, I'm a registered Republican and was involved in the Republican Party for many years, 150-year
mm-hmm.
legacy of the family belonging to the Republican Party. But I did a lot of programs with, at the time, Congressman Wayne Gilchrist, the 1st District of Maryland. And there was basically the beginnings of the teabagger. We were going to run against him because he wasn't conservative enough. And basically, I and some others totally wiped out that man's campaign within a matter of 2 weeks. And my long story short was, my reward was I had a one-on-one with Jack Kemp, former vice president candidate with Bob Dole, and at a fundraiser. And I warned him about the Rush Limbaugh, all the blowhard radio, and how they were enabling and giving a legitimate voice to the most racist, worst element in our society, the John Birchers and stuff. And his reply was, oh, you know, it's a good demographics to get whipped up at election time. You know, it's just, you know, when it's time to get people out to vote, you just whip up these nut jobs, and they go out and they really campaign for you. That's his words, not mine. Whip up.
That was Jack Kemp, huh? That was Jack Kemp?
This is Jack Kemp telling me to my face when I warned him about embracing and getting a solidifying voice to this lowest element in our country.
Yeah, that's about the worst thing I've ever heard about Jack Kemp because, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's known as somebody that did, you know, try to work across the aisle. And, you know, I got to say this, that I don't hate Republicans. I hate these people they put up there in leadership. But, you know, my father was a Republican. And, you know, if we're honest, we all have a little bit of everything in us, you know. We all don't like inefficient bureaucracies. I think that's something we can share across party lines.
Right.
You know, Democrats, you know, are typically maybe ahead of the game on social issues, but there's a lot of Republicans that understand, you know, the need for social harmony. And I say I have lots of Republican friends. It's these guys up in Washington, and they stay there too long, and they make this a game. You know what Jack Kemp said to you? That's talking about how to play a game, and this isn't a game. For God's sakes, it's not a game.
Now, I warned him. I said, you're not going to be able to control this group. I said, they're extremists.
Right.
They're reactionaries. You're not going to be able to control them. Well, I give you Donald Trump today and all the Klansmen, the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, and the teabaggers, the nihilistic teabaggers, who are basically his biggest part of his support right now. They took over the Republican Party that I warned Jack Kemp in 2005 that that's what exactly was going to happen.
Gentlemen,
yep.
Take a look at who's running Donald Trump's campaign. The guy who was running Breitbart. I mean, these guys are against everything I consider the best parts of America myself, but there's that. And then as another campaign manager, he brought on the one guy who, I forget the name of the congressman who brought all the impeachment and everything up and got shouted down after Bill Clinton was, you know, voted back and all of, or voted, you know, not to indict and all of that. that congressman had a guy in the name, I guess his name is Vossi, as a private detective who was doing some very illegal, underhanded stuff. And he is now a campaign representative and campaign strategist for Donald Trump. He'll give him a lot to say at the next debate, which ought to be a real doozy. And she can handle it, believe me. She was in town. Mike, she was up here in Fort Pierce, then she was down in Coral Springs. And do you know that up here in Fort Pierce, they had over 4,000 that couldn't get in to see her that were waiting out there? And down in Broward County, they filled the stadium at the school, and they had like 7,000 or 8,000 people outside listening because they wanted to get in too. And I'll tell you what, the whole time I was watching on video, on YouTube, the live speech feed, and she spoke, and you could see the people in back of her, and there was this young woman, I wouldn't say she was 20, she was wearing an LGBT t-shirt too, but the whole time that Sherry was talking, the tears are running down her face, and she's smiling, and she's clapping. And Hillary turned around a couple times to address the people behind her. You know she had to see her because she was right there. And she finally ended her speech with the, you know, love Trump's hate. And she was getting off. And I was watching the feed go on as she was leaving the crowd. She's greeting people. And she broke away from the crowd, walked over until she found the girl, and she embraced her. And spoke to her for a few seconds and embraced her again. And that kind of candidacy, that kind of care, that kind of moment, that's a whole lot different than what you see at a Trump campaign. Rally.
Yeah.
And to me, that makes a difference because the one thing that I think leadership really, really requires right now is kindness. And I see that in the mother of the village here. I'm a little bit hooked on. But, I mean, you know, it's time that we stood up to the hate. And I think that's why we're these stark polarities now.
Gwen, this is what's so mind-boggling to me. Not telling our age or anything, but I know you, both you and I grew up through the Civil Rights Movement and all the laws and the advances that were made in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, even all through the 60s.
Well,
and I'm thinking to myself, this was settled and addressed 50 years ago. How in the hell did we get full circle headed back to there? How did we regress?
I think the answer is we have to be ever vigilant.
It's got to be obviously a never vigilant thing. Well, the thing is I think, and I'll get back to Jack Kemp, when they decided they could whip up the nut jobs, feed them raw meat with all kinds of nihilistic lies, they've been lying about Hillary's, because, you know, you'll hear people say, oh, she's a liar. Oh, she, you know, correct, crooked Hillary. She has been investigated with a microscope up her butt for the last 40 years. They can't get, there's nothing there. Either she is the most brilliant criminal since Lex Luthor and Moriarty of Sherlock Holmes, or she's been totally innocent the whole damn time. Or we have a competent police force. Pick one of those.
Nobody's totally innocent. But here's the thing. During that debate, I could have walked through the television and hugged her to death.
Good.
Trump said to her, you know, I just don't think she's presidential. She hasn't got the stamina. Did you hear what she said to him? When you've traveled to 14 countries and you've negotiated peace treaties and ceasefires, when you've negotiated nuclear treaties, when you have sat down for 11 hours of testimony in front of Congress, you tell me about your stamina. That's when you've got stamina. And the other thing she said, just wiped the floor with him, and really he had no credibility standing up there getting obviously tired after 90 minutes. And she stood there strong, proud, and erect. And he said to her that, you know, obviously you took time off to, you know, lay out to prepare. And she said to him, you know, yes, I did. You're criticizing me for preparing for this debate. Well, yes, I did. And you know what else I prepared for? I prepared to be president. And it was a full shotgun blast right up his butt.
Good. That's one of the old conservative tactics is, well, let's make them they're the intelligentsia. You know, yeah, let's make smart people, you know, a derogatory term.
Yeah.
Intelligentsia, right? Only
well,
a fat
Mike,
word.
Well, Mike,
yes?
tell me, where are you going to be campaigning? Have you got anything lined up? Is there any place people can find you that are listening in?
Of course, a lot of my work so far has been, well, I've talked in person to over 3,000, 4,000 voters probably when I was getting my petitions because I qualified by the petition method. But I don't know if I should be announcing this because it's not a done deal, but I think we'll be opening a campaign office in downtown Delray Beach this week, but I can't quite announce that that's a done deal, but it's very close to being a done deal, and that's going to be that'll really help the ground game along. And of course, you know, we're getting down to this last month. This is the time when you start getting signs out, because I don't have time to talk to 800,000 voters directly, but I'm happy to talk to anybody who shows up, of course. But so we need a sign game. And I hadn't done much fundraising. It's not my thing. But we do need a little bit of money to pay for those signs. So if anybody wants to chip in $3 or so, get on my website. There's a little blue donor box and contribute at MikeOutForCongress.com. I got to get that in there. That's what my advisors tell me.
And they can get a hold of you at MikeTroutForCongress.com?
You can email me at Mike@CampaignForGoodGovernment.com anytime email. And like I said, hopefully this week the campaign office is open and I'll have a telephone number for you, but I just really shouldn't be getting ahead of myself with the announcements.
Mike, what really counts is that you're making the effort, you have the energy for it, and that you continue on past the campaign to keep creating an energy for whatever your next move would be. wishing you the very best in campaigning and running for office. You're on the ballot, yes?
Yes, I'm on the ballot. You know, Cher said, she's been rich and she's been poor. Better. So now I've run on the ballot. 2012, I got about 40,000 votes. Ran as a write-in in 2014. And now I'm back on the ballot. And I think that we have a much better campaign. I think I learned a lot. I think I've fixed a lot of things. I think we have a chance, a better chance than ever, especially with redistricting. We have a much more diverse electorate constituency now with this new District 21. And, you know, if I didn't think there was a chance, I wouldn't have done it.
Being not in Florida, you know, myself, but I know that the courts, Supreme Courts, have ruled that Florida had to redistrict. Are they less gerrymandered now? I mean, has this been a real positive thing, or is it like, well, yeah, this one's no longer gerrymandered, but boy, they still got this pocket here. I mean,
there's probably some play. There are probably some from some spots, Wayne. I know that district is a huge improvement. It's a huge improvement because, like I said, it's much more diverse. And I don't see any, I don't see any way for, you know, a particular party to, you know, take advantage with that, you know, that kind of diversity. So, you know, we'll see.
I was going to say, as long as it's fair and balanced, true, balanced districts, that can only be a positive, good thing for our country.
Yeah, of course, districts, that's only one component of free, fair, and open elections, you know. Campaign financing, of course, I know you guys agree that public financing campaigns is where we go. I did the numbers, and I tried to get all the numbers together for all political spending for the entire campaign, right? I don't remember what that was, but when I divided it by the number of voters, it came out to about $50 per voter.
Wow.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah, I'd like a matching fund where people could give $25 and get matching funds from the federal government and take that $50 from every voter that contributed and distribute it among all campaigns and take this whole focus off of groveling for money and, you know, and then owing favors. It doesn't have to be, a campaign doesn't really have to be such a big, expensive production. I look at the 2014 Michael Bus Brown defending his seat against Neil Kashkari. You know, the whole debate was Jerry and Neil, a couple of moderators, and a few stationary cameras. For all I could see, they didn't move much in a small studio without a live audience, but broadcast live. And then
gentlemen, I have to tell you we're about to lose time here. Mike, anytime you'd like to come back, if you have time before the election, we will get we will fit you in.
That'd be great, Glenn. I sure do appreciate you guys having fun, and I know your time's getting short. So.
Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure to have you on. I've enjoyed this. Gwen, a pleasure of always, hon. And for everyone else, we'll see you next week.
Thanks again. You guys have
keep pushing forward, and Jack, get well. We miss you, buddy. Okay,
that's
the show for this week. We will be back with you next Sunday at 6 p.m. This has
good
been...
Good night, all.
The Sunday Show on Here Be Monsters Radio. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. Good night.